Welcome to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM on your dial. Next up, Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. Hold on tight. And thank you so much for joining us tonight. You are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM on your dial. And this is Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I am your host, Greg Bossen, and thank you so much for listening. Now, as always, the opinions expressed here are those of myself and my guest, and do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board volunteers, funders, or even listeners. So welcome. We are in February, folks, and the weather has been freezing. Hopefully, it's gotten a little bit cooler, a little bit warmer, I mean. But boy, last week was really cold, and I did not like it. So anyway, our show tonight is actually quite a good one. So I'm not sure if you are aware of this, but the state of Georgia, the legislature, has begun its 40-day session. Now, this is not the federal, this is the state legislature down there in Atlanta in the Capitol, Capitol building. It started on January the 11th. It adjourns on April the 2nd. We already have over 500 bills that have been introduced, including one of which is to ban transgender girls from competing in sports in public and private schools and colleges. So this is a bill that we'll be talking about, amongst other things, with our guest. And our guest is a gentleman by the name of Jeff Graham. He's the executive director of Georgia Equality. He's a wonderful guy. He spends a lot of time down at the Capitol, and he's going to be my guest tonight, or our guest tonight, and we're going to learn all about some of the bills that are happening that affect the gay community and really the community in general. So very excited about that. He's wonderful. You'll think he's really cool. I do. Anyway, before we do that,
news of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh no, she didn't say what.
And I want to start first with COVID. Finally, looks like things are on the downward trend here in Georgia. I know that you see, I'm assuming that you've heard that they're going down nationally. Makes sense after the holiday surge. So let's see what we have here. So on February the 3rd, we had a total of 5,198 new cases here in Georgia. And on February the 5th, we had a total of 4,720 cases in Georgia. So we are now below, on the 6th, we had 4,426 new cases in Georgia. So our 7-day average is below 5,000 cases a day. Sounds like a lot, but not when you compare it to early in January when we were averaging almost 10,000 cases a day. So anyway, things are moving in the right direction. Just in case you're wondering, in the state of Georgia, we've had 914,000 cases, so close to a million cases, which is kind of amazing, isn't that? And 14,642 deaths so far, which is extremely sad. So let's keep wearing masks, please. And let's get in line to get our vaccination. Don't know how long that's going to take. I tried, but it's not even a possibility because I'm under 65. Although I do know some people that are under 65 that know someone and will have been able to get it. But hopefully, now that we have somebody in the White House who's actually going to pay attention to this thing, we can start moving in the right direction. So feeling good about that. So the Eagle, a little bit of news with the Eagle, and I mentioned this before, we actually had a guest to talk about this, but the Eagle has gotten the initial an initial landmark status from the city commission. Atlanta's Urban Design Commission unanimously approved recommendations to designate two Midtown buildings, one of which is the former home of the Eagle. I say former because at the present it's been closed since November. The other one is the Kodak building, but they're right next to each other, as historic landmarks. So both of these buildings are considered now, or well, they're in the process of becoming historic landmarks, despite the sometimes strenuous objections from the property owner. The commission approved the landmark nominations on January the 27th and votes that kick off a city legislative process to rezone the two properties on Ponce de Leon Avenue. The proposal will eventually include a public hearing by the city's zoning review board and face approval from Atlanta City Council. The city and Historic Atlanta, this is a group, Historic Atlanta, wants to designate the two buildings, 306 Ponce, which housed the Eagle until it closed in November, and 300 Ponce, which has sat vacant since the 1990s, both of these buildings as landmarks to protect them from being demolished. Last week's vote came after a two-week delay, which was requested by Dennis Webb, an attorney for Shahzad Hashmi, who is a Gwinnett psychiatrist who actually owns both buildings. The attorney asked for an additional two-week delay, but the board declined and pushed ahead with the votes. Webb is fighting this. The attorney is fighting this for the owner. The aging buildings were constructed as residences. In the mid-1900s, they received significant renovations to convert them into commercial buildings. Both buildings are in disrepair, and portions of the 300 Ponce structure have suffered considerable damage. The attorney for the owner agrees with the city recommendations that the Eagle's former home is of cultural significance, but he challenges whether the buildings meet the city's guidelines for architectural significance. So we'll see what happens there. It's exciting to see. Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms announced her intent to designate the buildings as landmarks in December. Granting landmark status to 306 Ponce could help bring the Eagle back to the location, says the owner, Richard Ramey, who was on the show actually a few weeks ago. But of course, it needs a ton of repairs before the bar would reopen. So, all right. And so that's good news. Now for a little bit of crazy. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene faces a national backlash for her incendiary social posts. The Georgia lawmaker went on the offensive by targeting transgender people and sponsoring legislation that would ban them from competing in public sports. So the Republican from Northwestern Georgia is facing growing criticism for her racist, anti-Muslim, and anti-Semitic rhetoric and QAnon conspiracy theories. Calls for her ouster from Congress are growing louder, but that's not going to happen, as we know. The Republican caucus passed on stripping her from her committee assignments, and so the entire Congress went ahead with it. So anyway, this just gives her more time to go and talk crazy, which she has done. She did this recently in an interview where she mocked transgender people and promoted anti-trans legislation that she co-sponsored after taking office. She said her critics want to eliminate gender roles and destroy our country. They don't want conservative speech. They don't want conservative values, this is her speaking, because they want to convince you there is no gender. They want to erase and attack God's creation, that there's male and female, and that he created them in his image. And they want to continue down the road of these policies and these things that are really going to destroy our country and destroy our identity and destroy who we are as a nation and tear us all apart. Yes, that is the biggest threat to our country right now, is transgender community people. That's ridiculous. All right. That's absurd. But it is, I don't know, it's funny to me and interesting how these people on the right are just so freaked out about the transgender community and about the idea that some people consider themselves non-binary. It's as if all of this hatred towards traditional, I'll call it homosexuality, has now been transferred to the trans community. And I feel like as a gay man, it is my responsibility to come to the aid and to support these individuals and to learn from them. You know, that's what I believe really, and I know I've said this before, is the entire purpose of this show and really more generally my life, to be honest with you. I feel like my life's purpose is to deconstruct gender roles. You know, growing up here in Atlanta in the 70s, you know, I knew that I was gay and I knew that that meant something was wrong with me, at least that's what I was told by the society in which I lived, and that I wasn't supposed to be like a woman, which is if you're a gay man and you like other men, then you are like a woman, and you're not supposed to be like a woman. You're not supposed to dress like a woman. You're not supposed to talk like a woman. You're not supposed to be into dolls or cooking. You know, you're supposed to be into football and, you know, playing army and loving guns, you know, I don't know. So to me, this hatred of my, the hatred that I experienced growing up had to do with me not being what a man is supposed to be. So to me, the transgender community, this is just another take on that, that, you know, God gave me a penis and therefore all of these other things are true and I cannot deviate from this construct. It's like, why can't I? You know, to me, it really boxes me in to not be able to explore my feminine side because I feel like we all have a masculine and a feminine side. And it's true that some people lean more to the masculine end and some people have traits that are more to the feminine end. But what I'm interested in is giving people the ability, giving people the freedom to be able to explore who they are. And that also includes, by necessity, how they view themselves in terms of their gender identity. And if some individual over there wants to consider themselves non-binary, that doesn't threaten me at all. I don't understand why that would threaten anyone. I think it's weird. Some people just can't handle it. And apparently we have one of them that's in office now in Marjorie Taylor Greene, whatever. She's crazy. The woman is crazy. But anyway, looks like she's trying to pick up where Donald Trump left off. Don't know that she'll be able to engender the kind of supports that he has, but she's certainly trying to fill that slot at this juncture. But what can you say? Not much. Anyway, so I think that's really it for the news. Thank you so much for listening, and please wear a mask. And with that, we will be right back with Jeff Graham to talk about what's going on in the Georgia legislature. And all politics is local, so I really do think that you should listen. All right? I'll be right back.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long way.
I had to let that go for a little while. So if you are unfamiliar with that, that is Over the Rainbow, and it's a version done by a Hawaiian artist by the name of Israel Kamakawiwo Ole. If there's an O-L-E at the end, I'm not sure. I'm quite sure I butchered that. But anyway, love that song. Thank you so much for joining us. For those of you that are here, you are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM on your dial, streaming at WRFG.org. And this is Atlanta's only local radio hour, Alternative Perspectives, and I am your host, Greg Bossen, and thank you so much for listening. Tonight's show, for those of you that have not been paying attention to local politics because national politics is so, I don't know, nauseating, exciting, scary, I don't know, but we're going to talk about the Georgia State Legislature and what's going on with them. So just as there is a federal government, there is a state government, which is ultimately more important in a lot of ways. And the Georgia State Legislative Session is in motion again this year. It actually started on January the 11th. It runs for 40 days through April the 2nd. And as is the case this year, and this has been the case since 2003 or 2004, both houses are run by Republicans. Of course, we live in Georgia. What are you going to do? Although we've been making strides, haven't we? This year, the Senate, though, the Georgia Senate is 34 Republicans and 22 Democrats. And the House, again, in Georgia, is 103 Republicans and 77 Democrats. So during this short window, the legislative body gathers and they conduct business. So they introduce bills, they argue, they go to lunch, they meet with people, they change bills, some even get passed. Of course, money gets earmarked as well. So far in this session, and this is kind of crazy, 531 bills have been introduced. And I wanted to have someone that could help us go through each and every one of these bills during this show. No, I'm not going to do that. But I do want to have somebody that can help us take a look at some of the bills that may have an effect on the LGBTQ plus community, and also just more commonly, just underrepresented and oppressed groups in our state. So we have someone with us tonight that spends a great deal of time attempting to protect our rights and moseying around the Capitol, talking to people. And that is Jeff Graham. Jeff is the executive director of Georgia Equality. Jeff, are you with us?
I am. It is great to be with you, Greg. Thank you so much for having me on tonight.
All right. Cool. All right. So there are a number of things that we can talk about. There are some bills that are very important that have been introduced that affect the queer community, and one of which was just introduced a few days ago. And this is House Bill 276. And tell us a little bit about that, Jeff, and what that bill is about.
Yeah, Greg. So thanks. So House Bill 276 is unfortunately the first anti-LGBTQ bill that we've seen this session. Now, in previous sessions, we've seen anywhere from 3 or 4 to as many as 17 that get introduced here in Georgia. So we have been expecting and preparing for this. What this one does is it takes aim very specifically at transgender girls and transgender young women. And it says, and if it would, heaven forbid, pass into law, it says a couple of things. One, it says that gender is an immutable characteristic that is defined at birth and by genetics.
Wow.
And that only girls that are, by their definition, genetically or biologically female, which there's a whole lot of problems with that, can participate in sex-segregated sports set aside for girls or women. and that furthermore, if there is a child, student that feels that there has been a transgender student that they have had to compete against in sports, they can sue the school district for damages or the school system for districts, or this applies, frankly, to private schools, so it could also be a private school. And so it's grade school and the university system of Georgia that are impacted by this. Now, the backers of this are going to say that this is about protecting the integrity of Title IX. And the first thing that I would say about this is that, first of all, if you want to protect the integrity of Title IX, and for folks who aren't familiar with Title IX, this is from the 1964 Civil Rights Act. It basically says that there needs to be specific sports for girls, for women on the collegiate level. And I think everybody agrees to that, especially if you look historically, there's been great disproportionate impact on girls and women not having the same access to sports as boys. But if you really want to address that issue, then you do things like look at funding disparities between the local volleyball team and the local football team. You look at building leadership pipelines so that you get more women coaches employed in public schools and at universities. These are how you address these issues of protecting and expanding Title IX. To say that transgender women and transgender girls can't participate is just wrong. So it is, it's wrong on its face. It's very discriminatory that it would single out transgender girls and transgender young women who, frankly, in our society are some of the most vulnerable people that there are to violence and harassment. And frankly, the number of transgender women that are killed every year violently in this country by murder as well.
Yeah.
So
I'm just struck by how is this protecting, you know, how is this in accordance with Title IX at all? It doesn't seem to be at all.
It's a false argument. And the reason that I bring that up is because this is the people that are pushing this bill. This is a lot of what they will say. But what we have to keep in mind is that, first of all, the goal of the vast majority of people who participate in school-based extracurricular sports activities is about being able to participate on a team, or to further yourself, to have a good activity that's around teamwork, around healthy behaviors, around alternatives, to have something to do after school. There are so many good reasons why kids get enrolled in sports while they are in school.
But doesn't this effectively deny them the ability to do it at all?
Absolutely.
Because if you have
the ability to do it at all.
I mean, unless you have a trans, female who is forced to play in, I guess they would be forced to play with the other boys. Now, what's that going to look like? You know?
Right.
So, you know, again, it's like, well, we don't want to upset. First of all, I doubt very seriously there are young girls that are concerned about trans girls playing on their teams. It's one of these things where it's like a solution looking for a problem that doesn't really exist.
That's exactly correct.
This is completely obviously politically motivated. I'm looking at the gentleman, Philip Singleton, who is apparently the first sponsor from Sharpsburg. And I mean, the picture alone says a lot, but the other bill that it looks like he sponsored was a Constitutional Carry Act. Yeah. I'm wondering if that's a gun rights bill.
That is a gun rights bill. And he's an extremely conservative, I would say a conservative extremist here in Georgia. It does have the support of 36 co-sponsors in this. So we take the bill seriously. But
what happens with these bills?
Extreme folks possible.
What do you think is going to happen with this? Like, what typically happens with things like this?
Well, it's frankly a little too early to know exactly what will happen with this. What happens with every bill? They are read in, and then a day or two later, they get assigned to a committee, and then the committee will start to hear bills. So where we are in the legislative process, we've just made it through day 13. So for the most part, the legislature has dealt with the mid-year budget adjustment. So we're halfway through the state's fiscal year. They go in and they adjust the budget. So if we have time, we can talk a little bit about that. But then after they do the mid-year budget adjustment, then they start to look at bills. And so you had already said there's well over 500 that have been introduced. It would not surprise me if by the time we get to March or April, that we could have 700, 900, 1,000 bills that are going to be introduced. Some of that is because we have 30 brand new legislators down there. They've just been elected, and everybody, when they've just been elected, they want to show that they've done something. So the first thing they do is they introduce a bill. And,
gotcha. Can you introduce a bill all by yourself without any other sponsors?
A bill all by yourself. You can introduce it with other co-sponsors. With 236 total legislators, if every single person introduced three bills, over 750 bills that get introduced. And if you actually look at it, most legislators will end up either being the lead sponsor or a co-sponsor of at least one or two dozen bills every single year. So
I wonder if this is more than happens. I wonder if this is what's more than happens federally. I wonder if there's more bills in the state legislature than get, I mean, you might not know that.
Yeah, I don't know that for sure. I actually think that there are more on a state level.
I would think so. I would think so. Wow. Okay, go ahead.
It'll be assigned to a committee, and then it'll be up to that committee, the chair of that committee, to decide if the bill gets a hearing or not.
Gotcha.
What our first goal will be is to frankly point out how extremist this legislation is, how it's not in keeping with the relatively moderate views of the majority of people here in Georgia. 63% of people in Georgia across the state feel that LGBTQ+ folks should be protected against discrimination. So that's more than just the Democrats. That's more than just progressives. That's a solid majority of people. So it's pointing out that this is really extremist views. Then because, as you pointed out, the Republicans still control both chambers, we usually make economic arguments. So with this bill in particular, we will start with the fact that, first of all, we are scheduled to have about a half dozen or more NCAA college sports championships that will be hosted here in the state of Georgia. Way back in 2011, NCAA instituted a policy that they would not discriminate against LGBTQ+ folks, and that they would not take NCAA championships to areas where it could be hostile for LGBTQ+ participants, staff, or visitors, spectators.
But we already saw that play out in North Carolina with the bathroom bill.
We saw that play out in North Carolina back in 2015, I think is when it was, when they passed their anti-trans bathroom bill. The NCAA championships pulled out for 3 or 4 years until they were able to undo that legislation. So that could have an impact here. Even more than that, though, the World Cup is coming to the Americas in 2026. And it'll be Canada, the United States, and Mexico that will be hosting the dozens and dozens of soccer playoffs and then the championships games for the World Cup. And so there will be dozens and dozens of cities across these three countries that are competing for spots to host. Well, certainly Atlanta wants to be one of those host cities for the World Cup. The organization that oversees the World Cup, it's an organization called FIFA. And don't ask me what FIFA stands for, because I'm not going to know that. But I do know it's FIFA. They set the rules and regulations for the World Cup. And 3 years ago, they actually said that for this World Cup, for the very first time, all the cities that wanted to bid to host a venue would be graded on a human rights scale. And that part of that human rights scale would be how LGBTQ plus people are treated under the laws. And so while the city of Atlanta has really good, strong local ordinances, this state law, this bill, if it were to pass, it would actually then supersede
the right
ordinance. And so this could make sure that Georgia does not actually host any of these any of the World Cup events in 2026. And the NCAA, those are not just Atlanta. I believe that Gainesville, Augusta, Athens are all slated right now to host various championships or final programs. And so it could have a devastating impact, not just on our state reputation, but on local economies throughout the entire state of Georgia.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent argument to make. And it's sad that that's what we have to go to. You know, some people feel like, you know, that's the only thing that they'll listen to. It's the only thing that gets them out of their own racism, sexism, whatever, is if you start talking about losing money. So,
although at the end of the day, I think for us at Georgia Equality, I'm guessing probably most of the people listening to the program tonight, this is a severe violation of someone's individual human rights.
Oh.
And more than that, it really is kind of institutional bullying of a
totally
marginalized and vulnerable group of kids.
It's a
group of adults that are ganging up to bully a group of kids. And that, just on its surface, it's bad enough if you go after transgender adults, but they're going after trans kids.
Yeah.
And it's just beyond the pale as far as
I'm concerned. it's such a sliver. But, you know, I think the main point is, like, you're basically denying these kids their rights, you know, because they're not going to, you know, they're going to get beat up, you know, if they're going to be playing with the boys. But anyway, interesting how the law doesn't go in the other direction, by the way.
Right. Right.
You know, because, and I have a theory about that, you know, because it's like, oh, well, you know, ultimately, you know, gays that are female like are, you know, they're to be hated, but you put a straight man and you put two women in front of each other that are gay, and you know, they want to sit down and with a popcorn bowl and a beer and watch them have sex, you know. But really, to me, that comes down to, really, it's just all about women hating, to be honest with you.
There's a lot of misogyny that is built into all of this. There's a lot. It really is an anti-woman bill in many respects.
Yeah, totally. All right, well, we could talk about this all day, but there's something else that's really important that's happening as it relates to AIDS drug assistance. So I'd love for you to help to teach us a little bit about what's going on with that.
Yeah, and so this actually, you know, the same day that bad bill was introduced, something really good happened, and that was that the state Senate joined the state House of Representatives to add $15.4 million into what we call the AIDS Drug Assistance Program, or ADAP. This is a program that has been around for well over 30 years. It's a combination of federal dollars and state dollars. And what it does is it pays for life-saving medications for low-income, uninsured people living with HIV and AIDS, so that they have access to the same medications as anyone else that has the best health insurance possible. Here in the state of Georgia, because HIV is still a major pandemic that continues to hard-hit Black communities, rural communities, very specifically Black gay and bisexual men here in the metro Atlanta area, Black transgender women and other transgender women of color are, again, very vulnerable, very hard hit by the ongoing HIV epidemic. So our numbers actually continue to rise here in Georgia. And Georgia right now has some of the highest HIV infection rates in the country, which means our epidemic continues to grow at a faster rate than it grows in other parts of the country. So right now, there's over 12,000 people here in the state of Georgia that depend upon this program, ADAP, to get their daily medications. That is roughly 130% increase over where it was just a few years ago. So 7 years ago, it was about 5,000 people that needed this program. And that 5,000 had been a number that was relatively steady for probably close to a decade. That's how quickly this has dramatically risen here in Georgia, the number of people needing this program, that it's now over 12,000. And the state funding for this has not increased at all over that time. We have had increases in federal funding because, again, there's federal dollars and there's state dollars, but the state dollars have not increased at all. So we found out last fall that the state was concerned that they were going to run out of money. And if they ran out of money for this program, they were going to have to put people on a waiting list. And it's bad to go on a waiting list for anything. Housing, food, nutrition, unemployment, all those things are bad issues. But think about the fact of going on a waiting list, not knowing if you're going to be able to get your medications or not, and the medications that, will literally help your health and could make the difference between life and death for you. So luckily, and this shows that even in a mixed conservative environment, sometimes wisdom can prevail. And so the House put in this $15.4 million increase to take care of this program in the short term. The Senate was at first not convinced about this. So there's probably people that are listening today that saw some of the action alerts that we put out there. Close to 1,000 people responded to the action alerts about contacting the Senate and explaining to the Senate why this program was important and why these dollars were so desperately needed. And we were very pleased that at the end of the day, last week, the Senate actually joined the House in putting this money in there. So there's not going to be a waiting list. The program will continue to expand. Frankly, until we have a full Medicaid expansion here in Georgia, we're going to continue to have these problems around access, certainly for people living with HIV, for a lot of people with a lot of chronic illnesses, a lot of people that are uninsured. So Georgia Equality also is part of the campaign to fully expand Medicaid. We're not just looking out for our folks. We're trying to look out for everybody. But for this issue right here that we're talking about tonight, there's 12,000 people living with HIV that are going to be able to rest a little bit better for the next several months, knowing that they'll be able to get access to medications. And that's due in large part because of the willingness of people that are listening to the program tonight that contacted their members of the Senate, contacted the Senate subcommittee, made phone calls, did emails to get them to understand how important this funding was.
Wow. Well, that sounds great. For those of you that are just joining, you are listening to Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour, and we are talking with Jeff Graham, the executive director of Georgia Equality, about what's going on in the state legislative session, which is happening right now, and we will be right back.
In all the clubs you get in using my name, you think you broke my heart, oh girl, for goodness sake. You think I'm crying on my own, well I ain't.
Thank you. Parents, if you're looking for a youth sports program in a safe environment, registration is now open for the Say Yes to Sports after-school program. Yes offers virtual and in-person daily sports programs for the Atlanta middle school youth. Programs include yoga, African dance, and basketball training. Yes also offers youth horseback riding, gardening, and cooking classes. For more information, the web address is yescsph.org. That's yescsph.org. Or by phone, 404-691-5187. This is another public service announcement from your station for Progressive Information, WRFG 89.3.
That's Joe Cocker. You are so beautiful. I don't know what my mood is tonight. I seem to be in a really, really mellow mood. You are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM on your dial. And this is Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting the queer community. And our guest tonight is Jeff Graham. With Georgia Equality, I keep trying to say Equality Project, used to be called Equality Project many, many years ago, but they changed the name because a project indicates that it's going to end at some point, and the work continues forever for Georgia Equality. Anyway, so we are going over various bills that have come up, and we only have a few minutes left here, but I want to talk about a couple of things that you're trying to get introduced. One of them in particular, this is a little scary, but it's an anti-conversion bill. So tell us what's going on with conversion therapy in the state right now.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. So conversion therapy is a thoroughly discredited mental health practice that basically has the theory that a mental health provider can change someone's sexual orientation or gender identity. And the folks who are survivors of conversion therapy, this is practiced on kids. It unfortunately, has been a practice, frankly, for decades and decades, but it has been thoroughly discredited now for probably close to 30 years, that the mental health profession has realized that not only can you not change someone's sexual orientation or gender identity, but the types of mental health therapy, if you will, that they put people through is really almost a form of torture. So it's trying to convince people to feel so much shame that they identify as lesbian or bisexual or gay or transgender or non-binary, to make them feel so badly about themselves that they repress those emotions, that they repress that sense of identity, that they repress that sense of self. It does not work. It harms people tremendously. And frankly, for far too many people, especially young people that have to go through this, they feel that their only option is suicide. So there's a direct linkage between young people that go through conversion therapy programs and young people that attempt suicide because they're struggling with their sexual orientation or their gender identity. 20-some states, including Utah, so a very conservative place like Utah, have outlawed this as a practice because they realize it's been discredited by every legitimate medical professional association, mental health association. And we feel that this is an important issue to bring forward here in Georgia so that we make it illegal as well. And State Representative Matthew Wilson, who's one of the seven open LGBTQ legislators down at the Capitol, he introduced this in 2019. There actually, we had an amazing hearing where his Republican colleagues, frankly, had never heard of this practice. I think a lot of us in the queer community, in the LGBTQ community, we hear about this all the time, but we forget that people outside of our community, they've never heard of such a thing.
Right, right. And
we presented testimony when there were people that talked about their life experiences, when there were other medical professionals that talked about how hard it is to root this out and prevent people from practicing this under the guise of good mental health. Republicans were so appalled that we had a lot of bipartisan support for the bill. Now, unfortunately, what happened was 2020. And the bill we thought was going to advance last year, because of COVID, the whole legislative session shut down, if you remember, for close to 3 months, that there was nothing going on. And then when it came back, outside of the budget and some other efforts,
didn't have time.
We looked at hate crime legislation and that was it. There was just no time for it.
So this bill got introduced in 2019, but it can conceivably be held over to the next year.
It can be held over during each 2 year session. So 2019 and 2020 got introduced in 2019, held over till 2020, where we thought we were going to have some movement on it until the world was different. So it now has to be reintroduced because we're starting a brand new legislative session. So it can be introduced in 2021, could have movement and see passage at any point in 2021 to 2022.
So the issue with this, as I'm sure you're well aware, is a federal court of appeals struck down a ban on conversion therapy in Florida in November of last year, saying that it interfered with free speech rights. So it's free speech rights. So what are your thoughts on that, and how is that going to affect or inform what we do here in Georgia?
Well, you know, I certainly disagree with that federal appeals court ruling. And other federal courts have actually upheld conversion therapy bans in other places in the country. So
that means it's going to the Supreme Court eventually.
It could conceivably go to the Supreme Court, but frankly, you know, that could take years and years and years.
Yes.
To do. And then the 11th Circuit, you know, that covers Florida, it covers Georgia. So we are under that ruling. I'm not an attorney, but in speaking with a lot of attorneys about this, part of why we hope to see it reintroduced and will continue to push for it to be a law is that, one, what was shut down in Florida was not a statewide ban. It was a local ordinance. So there were actually several local ordinances, local municipalities. We would argue that the state does actually have jurisdiction to regulate industries, regulates professions. It happens all the time. States have this specific power to set up statewide guidelines and regulations of what is acceptable and what is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And so that in and of itself is a state power that municipalities may not necessarily have that same level of power. And then to the merits of free speech, I'm not exactly sure how those local ordinances in Florida were crafted, but our local ordinance, or the bill here in Georgia, does allow an exemption for faith-based or ministerial counseling.
Yes, so, and I think that's what was going on in Florida. I think that was the guise under which they were giving that therapy.
Yeah. So you know, the bill, you know, if and when it passes into law, there are going to be some limitations around that. And I think that it's important that people know that right up front. They're still going to have some limitations around that. But if we really believe in the freedom of religion, and as much as I get accused of trying to infringe upon people's religious beliefs, I actually do believe in the freedom of religion. And so if you have a religious group that believes that you can, quote unquote, pray the gay away, the state really should not regulate that. I think that there are other ways of dealing with that. You deal with that through education. You deal with that by outreach to the parents. But part of how you deal with that is that you discredit this practice in the public sphere.
Correct.
With not a ministerial doing pastoral counseling, but someone who actually has a license to perform mental health services here in Georgia. Those are the people that should not be allowed to do this. Those are the ones,
yes,
required to follow certain industry standards.
Look at you. You are that, look at moderate Jeff Graham.
Moderate Jeff Graham. Yep.
That is awesome. I agree with you on this. And you know, and just more broadly, and we're actually almost out of time. There's one more thing I feel like we need to say, but I just feel like this is like, I didn't really grow up a Democrat. Like I consider, and I still consider myself an independent, and I'm fairly conservative in terms of certainly fiscal views, you know, and I just hope to God that nationally speaking, and I guess now, you know, yeah, well, we've got that crazy woman in Northwest Georgia.
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yes, but I really do hope that the Republicans can exercise Trump and QAnon outside of their party. You know, boy, I tell you what, Mitt Romney looks wonderful these days, doesn't he? You know, I mean, and I'm not necessarily, you know, I'm not just completely Democratic, like Democrat all the way. You know, I'm not completely liberal, and it's really heartening to see your attitude about this. But one more thing that I want to say, and that I think we need to mention, and then we're going to finish up here, is the a state discrimination ban. So yeah. Let's just real quickly talk about that.
Yeah. So federal 1964 Civil Rights Act. I think we all know that. We all know the importance of that, and that very broadly bans discrimination in areas like housing, employment, where we gather publicly. So we call that public accommodations, and that has said that it's wrong to discriminate against people based on their race, their nationality, their religion. Over the years, sex has been added to some of those statutes. Veteran status, disability status has been added to some of those statutes, but none of them explicitly on the federal level include sexual orientation and gender identity. Last summer, there was an important Supreme Court case. And again, this is, I think it's important that even before Amy Comey Bryant was on the Supreme Court, it was a very conservative court. But in a 6-3 ruling for a case out of Georgia with Gerald Bostock, a gay man who had lost his job down at Clayton County, after it came out that he worked, that he on his off hours was part of a local gay softball league.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court in a 6-3 ruling said that this violated the sex discrimination provisions in employment law. So we're moving forward. We've got some federal protection. So everybody, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity, is actually protected under federal law today for employment.
For employment, yes.
Employment only. People still face discrimination by businesses where they go to do business. Be it restaurants, hotels, taxi drivers is a bad example, but Uber drivers, Airbnb has had problems with this. So there's challenges to this, certainly with housing and public accommodations. And while we're waiting for a federal law to get passed that addresses these deficiencies, we're focused on a state law. And so what a lot of folks are going to be shocked to find out is that federal law passed in 1964, throughout the 70s and into the 80s, 47 other states passed some state-level version of a non-discrimination act, a statewide civil rights bill. Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi, the only three states that never did.
That is not good company to be in.
It is not good company to be in. No offense to our friends and family and loved ones in Alabama and Mississippi, but we like to think that Georgia's a little bit more on top of things than that. And so for years, we've been arguing that we need to address this. And it's incredibly important for members of the LGBT community because we don't have the same federal protections. But for everybody who faces discrimination, whether it's because of your religion, your national origin, your age, your race, your nationality, to have to file a federal lawsuit is incredibly expensive and incredibly time consuming. That's why most states have passed this, to make the laws fairer and more accessible to everyone. This year, early indications, and it's still early in the legislative session, but we've had more interest from Republicans and more interest from the business community in seeing this sort of legislation get introduced and actually move forward towards becoming a law. So I still remain hopeful that in the next week or two, we'll see a bipartisan bill that gets introduced that actually makes these corrections and adds this to state law.
And so do you approach somebody, you approach one of these congressmen to do this?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
We've been talking to folks for years about it. With how the elections played out in the fall, there are several people that we've been in direct conversation with that have expressed interest in carrying this bill. And these are Republicans, because again, Republicans still control everything. Democrats have solidly been on board in support of this bill.
Right.
To have 76 Democrats behind a bill, you still need 91 people to support the bill for it to get out of the House. So there were enough people that their elections were close enough that they want to show that they really are a moderate Republican. They're not part of the extremist group like the folks that are pushing the anti-trans bill that we talked about earlier. Yeah. There's a lot of folks that are much more moderate. They have conservative tendencies. They feel differently on a lot of issues than I do, but they recognize the basic humanity and the basic value of making sure that fairness is part of the laws here in Georgia.
Yeah, well, that sounds great. And thank you so much for spending time with us tonight, Jeff. And I would love it if I could get you to come back after the session is over and we'll revisit in May or April.
Yeah, let's do that.
See where we are. But thank you for the good work. And just for people that aren't familiar with Georgia Equality, where can they go to find out more, make a donation, get involved?
Yeah, so the best spot is always our website, which is GeorgiaEquality.org, O-R-G, and Georgia is all spelled out. But you can also find us. We have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, so you can find us there. Follow us on our social media channels. If you sign up on the website, we actually send information to you. It's a little bit easier for you to take action through those emails. So please join us in our efforts to advance fairness, safety, and opportunity for LGBTQ+ folks around the state of Georgia.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff. You're awesome. And thank you for listening. Next week is going to be truly interesting, but I'll keep it secret until then. Love you, and I'll see you next week.